and I snap the ball, and there's just this horrific splash.
It's time to join the stink tank.
You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I completely emptied my bladder on the bench.
Mark Schlereth.
It stinks!
Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob.
He's here, everybody. You look forward to it every week. And he is now with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And as our producer said, there is plenty of stink to go around. And here to address it all is the one, the only Mark Schlereth. Mark, how are you, man?
I am doing good. Speaking of stink, I feel like I need to make a new video for the Jets fans. I'm not quite sure what exactly I would do for Jets fans, but I feel like it's time. I mean, they're going to get Flacco. They just re-signed Flacco to trade, you know, right before here the trade deadline. So I just feel like that's I need to start focusing on being a little bit more snarky.
If you could top the last one, that'll be a massive achievement because that was gold. That was fantastic.
No, I don't know that I could top that. I don't know that I would say anything. I might just go Joe Flacco. Just say Joe Flacco, and then just start giggling.
Hey,
you know,
give us some background on that. How that whole thing started of you going after the Jets fans.
Well, I mean, New York fans in general are softer than microwave butter. So, you know, they all talk tough. You know, but when you say something that's true about their team, they get their panties in a wad. So, you know, the whole thing started with some beat writer that apparently has deity status in New York with the fans. It was that Seattle game. You remember the play when DK Metcalf caught him on the outside and just face planted. It was James Bradbury. He just face planted him with a stiff arm, right?
Yes.
And I got excited. It's a football play. It's like real contact that doesn't get flagged. There's not much of that in the league anymore. So I get excited. You know how I am. And they got all mad at me. Jets fans got all mad at me. He did a good job making the tackle. And this guy named Ari Stapleton goes, well, you realize he almost created a fumble on that. And I said, I did not know that almost fumbles were actual categories. They lead the league in almost fumbles, you ass clown, right? And I didn't know who he was. I mean, he just jumped in my timeline. And so apparently if you call him an ass clown, everybody in New York gets all upset about it. So, but yeah, again, you know, we, you got a turd in your pocket? What do you mean we? Were you out there making a play? We. So, a French waiter? We. I was like, get out of my time. Like, and then that really created, you know, controversy, apparently, because they can't handle it when you criticize, you know, when you tell the truth about their team.
The video was born of him with his Super Bowl rings on, his helmet on.
Right. Well, that was the Giants. The Jets one was just them being pathetic and them thinking they all of a sudden they fixed their woes because they went out and got Zach Wilson, who I really liked. But I'm like, dude, this is your plan every 3 years. I mean, you said the same thing when you drafted Darnold. Like, I don't care who your quarter. You could draft Stretch Armstrong. If you can't block him and you can't run the ball and you don't have any talent around him, I don't care who the guy is. He's going to get beat to a pulp and he's not going to be any good. I mean, that's the recipe. That's how you develop quarterbacks. You develop quarterbacks for retirement. That's what you do. You develop them for 3 years and send them into retirement. So, anyhow.
well, and if you want to check it out, go to Mark's Twitter, and I don't know, what would you type in? Mark Schlereth, Jets fans. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
You got the helmet on.
I'm sure you'll find it. It's in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's really good stuff. So, all right, well, let's address what's happening out here, Mark. It's not pleasant as the Seahawks lose again. They're 2-5. They are 0-3 at home for the first time since Dave Wyman was a star middle linebacker for this team in 1992. And it would be very easy and convenient to blame it on, well, you don't have Russell Wilson. You don't have Chris Carson. Problem is they were struggling with those guys healthy. So the struggles aren't new. Now the struggles are different in that the offense is really, really struggling and the defense looks like they've taken a step forward, but it's a bottom line business and they lost and they continue to lose. What are you seeing? Did you get a chance to sit down and take this game in? And if so, what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I was doing that. I was watching. I was flipping back and forth between the regular broadcast and the Manning Brothers broadcast, which I find
awesome.
I find interesting. Like, I really love. Yeah, I love some of the football talk. Not that you're really watching the game, you're really listening to kind of some of the conversations that go on during the course of the game. But I think, you know, I think it's really hard to manage a football team and, you know, to keep everybody happy and also to, you know, to pay the guys who earn the right to be paid, but still keep a good enough football team around those guys. I think you're seeing a lot of that in Seattle right now. And obviously, you know, you got to be able to be better throwing the football. There's no question about that. But hell, you got to be able to run it as well. And if they're going to shut down the run, you better be able to make them pay in those situations with the way you throw the ball. So there just is a lack of continuity. But I don't care who you are, man. It's hard to win in this league. It's really hard to win when you don't have a quarterback that can play above the X's and O's, when you don't have a guy that can make those plays. And, you know, he made the one touchdown pass to DK Metcalf was, I mean, let's face it, it was incredible, you know, above the X's and O's play, not by your quarterback so much, but by your wide receiver. And, you know, and I think you get into those situations, you know, where everything has to go exactly to plan for you to be able to win in this league with backup quarterbacks and guys who can't do that. And that's hard to do. It's hard to play and not have mistakes derail you. It's just a really hard thing to do unless you've got guys that can make, you know, exceptional over the top, big time plays, explosive plays. And when you don't have that, it's hard to put a string of 10, 12 plays together that create a scoring drive. And that's why, you know, that's why when you look or you talk to coaches in this league, one explosive play is the equivalent, whether it's a, you know, 10, 12 yard run or it depends on who you're talking to, 17 to 20 yard pass, somewhere in there. Those are how they kind of define explosive plays. Every explosive play in a drive is the equivalent of 2.4 points. So in today's NFL, if you don't get explosive plays, it's almost impossible, just almost impossible to put big scores up without explosives. And that's what you're seeing right now with Seattle.
Hey, Mark, I guess I feel like some people think I sound like a caveman or something, but watching DeMario Davis last night, and he came up and just powdered the center and then, you know, drove him into the running back. He blew up the blocking back who was Travis Homer on one blitz that he had, ends up, you know, affecting the play. I mean, and the thing that I wish for on the Seahawks defense is that kind of play, just being physical and hitting people and just being a team that's known as we are going to punish you. I talked about a series where Cam Hayward just bench presses Shell into the backfield, and then DeMario Davis has those two big hits and they end up getting off the field. And to me, that still plays. And I feel like, is that wrong? I mean, or am I wrong about that? Do you think that still is basically a thing, that if you are physical, that you're going to win games?
I 100% agree with you. And I am also a caveman. But I will tell you, you show me teams that can physically dominate. Now, one thing about like the DeMario Davis hit you talked about, it may not go down on the stat line, but it gets your whole team, not just your defense, not just your D-line, not just the other linebackers, not the DBs. It gets the whole team on the sideline jazzed up.
Yeah.
It gets everybody excited. It's infectious. Big hits and physical play are infectious. And the other thing it does for you is you want to be able to participate in it as somebody else on that defense. It almost is as though you're like, man, I got to pick my game up because I'm not making those hits. And so then it becomes infectious and you start to dominate the line of scrimmage. And when you dominate the line of scrimmage and you have those plays, man, I'm telling you what, you snatch the soul out of your opponent. And that there's nothing better. Like, I've always said this about just playing in general, Dave. Like, if you give up as a defender, you guys give up a 60-yard touchdown, you give up the touchdown that they gave up to DK Metcalf, right? And you're like, son of a gun, you know what? We busted a coverage or whatever happened. That's horrible. And you shake it off. But when the team that you're playing against runs the ball 5-6 yards a carry and there's nothing you can do, and you've been there where the defensive players are yelling at one another, we got to get a stop, you know, and you're just cramming it down their throat play after play after play, and as beat up and as tired and as physically wiped out as you are at the end of the game, you're in the locker room with ice bags on your hands and your shoulders and your knees and everything else, you're taking satisfaction in that locker room going, you know what, if I feel like this, imagine what those sorry sons of guns feel like, because we just snatched the soul from their bodies. Man, I thoroughly and wholeheartedly adhere and believe in that aspect of football. And, you know, I'll go back to last year's playoffs. Show me the team, even Seattle. Show me the team that they got beat in the trenches. I'll show you the team who won the playoff game. And Seattle got throttled in that playoff game by the Rams with, let's face it, their backup quarterback who they knocked out, and then Jared Goff, who was just coming off of, you know, who was coming off a hand surgery or whatever, kind of 11 days earlier, and he's, you know, he was so valuable that they traded him to Detroit. So, I mean, you know, you do the math.
So, Mark, when you look at this team, and, you know, we're all asking, you know, what's the problem? How do you fix it? What do you do? Do you look at this as a coaching problem? Is it are we overestimating the talent on this roster? Is it just lack? The one common theme seems to be we hear every week, hey, guys got to do their jobs. We just have to communicate. Guys, and maybe that's just, as Dave likes to say, something that just gets said because they don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But what is the solution from the outside look like to you? Like, is it philosophy or is it just lack of talent? What do you see?
Well, I think there's always – you know, there's always some talent. There's always some talent issue in putting whatever talent you have in a position to win. Like I always say, don't put a guy in a position to fail and then act shocked when he fails. You're the dumbass that put him there, right? like that's just common sense to me. And you see it done in coaching in this league all the time. But I would say this, philosophically speaking, you got to have on the offensive side of the ball, and I believe it's on defense too, but you have to have a philosophy. You have to have a group of tenets, group of beliefs that your players understand wholeheartedly. When we get into this situation, this is what we're going to do. And so, like, for instance, let me give you a for instance on this. When I played here in Denver, we got into second down and one. We're converting. We're a conversion team. We're going to try to pummel you. Even if it's a 2-yard run, we take pride. We take pleasure in converting a 2-yard run and it being physical and guys being on the ground and guys having to lick their wounds a little bit. Now, a lot of people in this league look at that. Like I looked at it as a shot down for us to take a shot on your defense and punish somebody. A lot of coaches look at it as a shot down. Opportunity to take one over the top and see if we can get a big play. I hate that. I hate that mentality. And so when it comes down to a philosophy, like to really be good, in my opinion, at, let's say, running the football, you have to have a philosophy of this is who we are. This is what we hang our hat on. Let's call it wide zone. We're a wide zone, tight zone football team, and we're going to run the snot out of that. Now, we'll show you different formations and different personnel groupings, and we'll do all those things, right? But the bottom line is we're running these two plays.
Uh-oh.
And these two plays are...
Boy, he leaves us
hanging. Oh, he left us hanging. it was going to be the secret
The big
sauce.
Reveal.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get him back here.
We had that the other day. Somebody cut off right as they were getting ready to say
who
something.
Was that? They were... And the problem is...
Yeah.
Click. Everybody's on the edge of their seat. Yeah? And?
Yeah. It's a heck of a tease.
Yeah, we'll get him back. I was putting him back on.
Well, I was going to, you know, talk to him. I mean, he's getting very philosophical here, but, I mean, these things matter. And, you know, everybody says, well, you got to have a sophisticated offense and creative and this and that. Football starts with being physical. It starts with that. If you can do that, then, you know, and that's what we did in 1992 is, you know, we took our frustrations out on other teams.
Yeah.
And they knew it, and they respected us for that. You see the respect around the league. So, you know, you mentioned this earlier, but I'll bring it up again. When Alvin Kamara gets just chopped down by Quandre Diggs.
Yeah.
And Kamara gets up and pats him on the head like, hey,
good
hit. That was a good hit. They respect that. And then, you know, if you continue to do that, all of a sudden, you know, you'll get to a point where you dominate them, you know, mentally, as far as, you know, the beatdown goes. And I think that's his are you back there, Mark? That's what you're describing, I think.
I am back. I was still talking, by the way. I didn't even know I was off. I was on this incredible rant. I just kept going. And then I finished, and I was like, you know what I'm saying? And you guys were gone. I was like, what the hell? Where'd they go? They got tired of that?
Anyhow, he's going, that was so good, like, they're at a loss for words.
Right. No, you know what I was going for? I was wrapping it up to go to Jack Palance, you know? Remember Jack Palance in the movie City Slickers?
Yes.
Where he goes, this one thing, it's about this one thing, and then he dies? And you're like, what the hell is the one thing? You're like, life is wrapped up in this. But you have a philosophy of what you want to do. And it's, you know, for us it was wide zone right or left and tight zone right or left, right? And we're going to run the crap out of that play. And we're going to give you a bunch of different window dressings, personnel. You know, we're going to give you all those things. But we're running that play till the cow comes home. And then a couple of adjunct plays off of it. But here's what it does to a guy like Dave, right? As a defender, you want to, you know, you've got, hey, if I get a reach block, this is how I defend a reach block. If I get a cutoff block, this is how I defend a cutoff block. If I get a double team, this is how I get. So you're playing blocks. As an offensive philosophy, I want you to play scheme. So I want you to see wide zone so many times or tight zone so many times that you've got to play it. You've got to play it over and over and over again. And then when I hit you with the adjunct play to it, so if it's you're playing cutoff block, double team, cutoff block, double team, cutoff block, double team, and then we double team you, and it's a front side power play, and it looks identical to what you've been playing four or five plays in a row, and now you basically squeeze that cutoff double team and you're three gaps removed from where you're supposed to be. Now we get a gaping hole on a power play and we get a 16-yard run and you guys are yelling at each other. And if you don't have a philosophical approach to what you're doing and what you believe in, then the bottom line is you're just running plays for the sake of running plays and you hope you have a breakout somewhere. And that's not how football works. And it takes commitment that a lot of coaches and a lot of offensive coaches aren't willing to make. You know why? Because running the football and doing that doesn't get you hired as a head coach. Mm. And I've said this a million times, I've probably said it on your show. Like when you develop a young quarterback and you throw the ball all over the ball yard and you put up a lot of offensive numbers in the passing game, that's like Viagra for 80-year-old owners. They think that's football today, and it's not. But you know what? It does make them excited, and they hire you. And the bottom line is you still don't understand how to run the football, and you still don't understand the value of that.
I love it.
That's a great analogy.
Hey, Mark, I know you did the Rams, and I guess it's just because watching Cooper Kupp with 150-some yards and two touchdowns, and, you know, I know that the Arizona Cardinals are undefeated, obviously, but other than them, or do you think they're the best team? Because I'm looking at the 6-1 Packers who had a fluky loss, and then, you know, I guess I should throw the Bucs in there, but the Rams, and you did a game with them against the Giants, they're 6-1. Do you think Arizona's the best team in the NFL right now, or do you think one of those other, maybe one of the other 6-1 teams are?
Well, I think all those teams are really good, and I think the thing about Arizona that has shocked me a little bit is, you know, they're this you know, collegiate kind of system, right? The whatever they call that, the Red Rifle or the whatever the hell that's called, you know, whatever their spread system is. But what they've done a really good job of is morphing into a little bit more of an NFL actual system where they are using personnel groupings. They are running the football using personnel groupings, using multiple tight ends, using, you know, their 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, using 21 and 12 personnel. So they're changing their personnel sets and they've become far more diverse in their running game. And, you know, their passing game is so good at creating space and getting guys open. And then I think the bottom line is you can play everything correctly and you can do it really well. And you can have their quarterback trapped. And all of a sudden that guy runs around like Mighty Mouse and then finds somebody 40 yards down the field and just throws a dime. And so you do everything right. And guess what? You still get burnt for a big explosive play over the top. So they're a really frustrating team. And they're a really good team. I love the Rams offense. I love, you know, they're a spread football team, or they're a power run football team disguised as a spread football team. And Eric Yarber, my former teammate at the University of Idaho, is their wide receiver coach. And I put up a graphic. I call them the Yarbinators, you know, all his wide receivers, because they run the ball like a power run formation out of 11 personnel. And it's because Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are not prima donnas. They just absolutely will destroy DNs, outside linebackers, inside linebackers, safeties. They don't care. They'll get involved, and they take a ton of pride in their run blocking on the edge, both front side and backside. And that's really what set them apart. So I love the way they operate as well. But, yeah, I think all those teams are great, and I think Arizona is shocking when you watch them on film of how they've evolved that offense, you know, from being just a collegiate spread kind of offense to a, you know, a real more, they're still spread, but they're more power run out of spread than, and they have been in the last couple of years.
Hey, Mark, appreciate you, taking it from all the technical stuff to down to like the bones of what football is all about. And a lot of things that, you know, the people at Pro Football Focus and stuff like that don't understand that stuff. So I really appreciate that, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, they're full of crap. So
we'll just move. He is Mark Schlereth. He is with us every single week. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schlereth. That's S-C-H-L-E-R-E-T-H. That's how you spell that last name. Find him on Twitter, because it sounds like there could be a new debut coming, nice. An addressing of the Jets fans.
Go
perhaps.
Get him.
So we look forward to that, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Be well.
Thanks, Mark.
There you go, Mark Schlereth, who's, again, never afraid to share his opinion with you.
So those good. Guys are full of crap.
That made you love them even more.
What do you
right
have to
there,
say about right? Pro Football Focus, Mark?
They're full of crap. So good. All right. Our thanks to Stink joining us every single week. Coming up, what will this season look like when Russell Wilson returns? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Mark Schlereth for joining us in the previous segment. In case you missed that, he's with us every week, and he's really, 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 really good. So if you missed any of it, you can head to the podcast page after the show at 710sports.com and just click that podcast button. It'll be there for you if you ever miss anything on the show that you want to catch up on. And Mark Schlereth is definitely something you'd want to catch up on. How about this? Oh, what does the season look like when Russell gets back, do you think? Is it the cure-all? Is it, hey, they've only looked like this because Russell's been gone? Because that tells me you haven't really been watching the season from the very beginning, because with Russell there, they win the first game, which was the most complete game of the season still, against the Indianapolis Colts. They lose to Tennessee. They lose to Minnesota. They beat San Francisco, and they lose to Los Angeles, the Rams, in the game he got knocked out in. So they were 2-3 with Russell Wilson. Is he all now? I'm not trying to make the case that there's no difference between him and Geno. It's light years for anybody wondering. But is it enough to change the fortunes of this team, considering who they've got to face when he gets back? You've got Green Bay. You've got Arizona. You were just asking which of those are the best. You're talking about both of those in the conversation for the best team in the NFC at this point. And you're going to be facing them right out of the gate.
Yeah, back to back. And then you got to go to Washington, you know. I mean, look, you should win that game, but, you know, their defense is really good. I mean, is Russ back by then? I mean, I'm just going to say that he is going to be back. And my prediction would be this, that they're going to find a way to beat Jacksonville. Although I was talking to Jake Heaps, and he already started looking at Jacksonville, and he's like, their defense is apparently pretty decent. So, I mean, you go and look at some of the, you know, where they rank, they're not as bad as, you know.
Their record would indicate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but if you get him back for Green Bay, I say they can probably go there and make a game out of it. But I don't know, man. I am very convinced that this team needs to get way more physical, and especially on defense, and just be, you know, that they are going to attack blocks. No more catching blocks. No more trying to go underneath or dance around blocks. They have to be physical in order to, otherwise this season is going to be lost, because they don't have, you know, Russell. I mean, Russ accounts for a huge part of, I mean, this is the difference between whether they win like another three games or they win, you know, eight games. I mean, that's kind of where they are right now. And I don't know about winning eight games, but
yeah,
I mean, you know, look, that's the dream, obviously.
Pete had an interesting comment about Russell and just what he's meant to him and where he'd be without him.
I'd say it this way. If I've been here a long time, and if we didn't have Russell, I probably wouldn't have been here a long time. Because think of all the magic that he's created in the years. He's got numbers and stats and fourth quarter, this is and that's and all that stuff. You know, one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And it'll be really fun when he comes back and plays football again for us this year. We owe a tremendous amount. You can see how hard it is. You know, I mean, all of these games, the Rams game, the Steelers and this one. I mean, you know, Russell's a factor. He's a fantastic, positive factor and always has been. And, I mean, those are exactly his time. That's his time. And that's when he shines. And we miss him. And in the meantime, we're going to keep fighting and clawing and doing everything we can.
Did that surprise you?
It was a surprisingly honest statement. I mean, if not for him, I probably wouldn't have been here. I've been here a long time. And if we didn't have him, I wouldn't have been here as long.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of weird to hear that, you know, because there's been a couple things that have gone back and forth between, I know it was all Russell in the offseason. Pete didn't say anything.
Right.
And then, but, you know, after the Titan game, remember he was like, yeah, I wish Russ could have helped us out with this and that. And, you know, for him to come out and say, yeah, I wouldn't have been here possibly. Yeah, it was kind of interesting.
Do they win these games if Russell's there? Again, the people, it's sort of recency bias. We're looking at this going, well, Geno fumbled at the end of that game and he threw the pick at the end of the Ram game. And then this game, it was just bad all the way around. And, you know, so we look at Russell as the cure-all, and again, it's not even a comparable. It's not apples to apples comparing Russell to Geno. I mean, there's just such a gap in talent between the two. But again, this team was a losing team with Russell this year. We were talking about all the problems. We were talking about what we weren't seeing on offense, and defense was certainly a huge problem. So you can't lose sight of who they were when he was here. Not saying it doesn't give them a much better chance, but looking at it now, do you go well? If Russell's there, maybe they find a way to beat the Rams. They find a way to beat the Steelers and the Saints.
Yeah, I don't think the Rams at all. No way. I mean, that was the biggest defensive meltdown, I thought. And that's when things needed to get fixed, and they sort of did against Pittsburgh. I still don't think they're nearly physical enough. But I think they're 4-3 right now with Russ. I mean, you win these games 13-10. I mean, how much does Russ account for? How many times, you know, when Geno got sacked, would Russ have found a way to get away and mm-hmm. throw on the run? I mean, he just, when he gets pressure, that's the one thing. I mean, Geno can run, but he's almost like a Ben Roethlisberger type, because it's no good when he takes off. I mean, he might as well just run it.
The idea of him passing at that point is out the window, whereas Russell, you got to keep, you're keeping the defense honest, because he may, as long as he's behind the line of scrimmage, you don't know what he's going to do.
Right. But if when he takes off running, just keep running. You can't throw on the run. He just can't do it. So, yeah, but I think Russ gets
talking
out
about
of
Geno.
Yeah, I'm talking about Geno, of course, yeah. And you know, if Russ is in that game against Pittsburgh, I mean, they just find a way to win it. You know, him and Pete together. Same thing in this 13-10 deal. And then, you know, you beat Jacksonville, and we'll see. You know, and then you're 5-3, and then you go into Green Bay, and, you know, we'll see. That might be a tough game, but Russ just gives you such a better chance. I mean, I don't think Pete was exaggerating. It's kind of funny. After the games, Pete gets very kind of real. Like, I feel like that's when he's most likely to tell you how he's feeling. And, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's I mean, Russ is a difference maker. There's no question about it. I just wonder how much of a difference this particular year, because things weren't clicking, you know, prior to him being hurt. It wasn't clicking on either side of the ball. They've had problems all year. People complaining. We were talking about where the tight ends. We were expecting to see the tight ends, where the checkdowns. We were going to see that. So there was a lot of, hand-wringing about what wasn't happening on the offensive side of things. Meanwhile, I think the defense was so bad that it sort of overshadowed what wasn't working with the offense. Because we were talking about it. They'd have one great half or string together a couple drives, and then all of a sudden it's, 5-3 and outs. And, yeah. So they were having their own problems with Russ there and with Chris Carson there. So I'm just wondering, back to what we asked, Schlereth, is it more the philosophy, the play calling? Is it not so much about the players as opposed to what they're asking the players to do?
Yeah, it's interesting because you see, we were talking about this before the show. How many times have you seen Dwayne Brown visibly frustrated?
He's been more demonstrative this season than every season combined that he's been here.
Right.
Where you've seen him palms up in the air, like, what are you doing? We've seen him yelling at Kyle Fuller on the field and on the sidelines. We've seen, I feel like the last three or four games in a row, we've seen him at some moment with palms up or just flat out yelling at somebody.
Yeah, I think he's frustrated. But again, I thought Mark did a great job of, like, he was talking about the outside stretch play or whatever. Like, you have to have something that you can go to that you do really well. And in it, everything that he talked about had to do with being physical. That's what offensive linemen want, man. I mean, I'm sure that's what Dwayne Brown's palms up in the air about is that, hey, let's run the ball and let's be physical about it. And let's just try not to get too tricky and let's stick with it. So I wasn't that annoyed. Everybody was freaked out over them trying to run the ball against the Saints defense. You don't just stop doing that just because they're the number two run defense. And they actually put up 90 yards, but to me, it's more about the style. Like, you could blow holes through that if you commit to a couple of things that you can do really well and just decide, look, this is where, as Jake Heaps would say, this is where we lean our hat.
That's right. All right, coming up, will patience be rewarded with the Seahawks offense? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, talk some football with him. So stay tuned for that conversation. By the way, during the breaks, I think listeners will get a great kick out of hearing you and Lefko just sit there and analyze. I bought Lefko a big jar of Jelly Bellies for his birthday, and there's 49 flavors in there.
How do you know that, Bob?
Because you told me.
But how does Dave know there's 49 flavors?
He counted the rows. He counted. So they've got little pictures on the back, a little diagram that says, here's this one is this flavor, this one is this flavor.
It's like a legend, right?
And Dave's looking at each one. He's going, okay, there's six rows and there's five across here. He's doing the math, and Lefko's going, there's 49. It says it right on the front of the bottle here, on the front of the
jar. I didn't trust their math.
The jar. But hearing you guys discuss, I got this brown one. I don't know what this flavor is. Is it a chocolate? And he's like, oh, no, that might have been root beer. And you're like, that's right. You guys are very excited syrup. About the discovery of.
Someone suggested that it was poop, a poop bean, which always begs the question, how do you know?
Yeah.
I think I had the maple syrup one just now. But it was weird because I ate it and I like instantly got up and walked in there, made a beeline for it. I'm like, I got to figure out what that was.
I know you guys are just, it's like seek and destroy. I'm just going to eat one, try to decipher what it is. I'm not sure. I'm going to look at the grid on the back.
Jelly Bellyology.
It is.
Lefko could talk about food all day long.
Yeah, it's just so good. So
for me,
fun.
Only about 3 or 4 hours. So it works out perfect.
It's just very entertaining to see how invested you guys are in that whole thing. All right. We'll talk more football with the professor at the top of the hour. So, as far as this offense goes, Dave, I asked the question last night in our show notes. And again, acknowledging you've got your backup quarterback in there. So there's a different level of expectation from this offense. But if we recall, so here's what Pete said about last night. Because I'm looking at the play calls. I'm looking at the effectiveness of the run plays that were called. There were 28 of them compared to 22 passes. And Pete made a comment after the game, which I thought was interesting, but I thought it was also in stark contrast to something he said earlier. So here's what he said last night after the game.
You've got to work with them and take care of them. And look at all the young quarterbacks around the league right now. You know, look how hard it is on them. These guys are freaking struggling, man. It's a challenge. And so we have to adapt the game to fit, you know, the makeup of your players. And that's what you see. So Shane's been right in the middle of all that. So your question, he's had to make all of that kind of shift, you know, already in his early time calling plays. And I think he's doing a really good job.
So adjusting to the players you've got, talking about Geno as a backup, and that's him with Salk this morning. Here's what he said after the game when Geno got thrown in there after Russ got hurt in that Ram game.
Fortunately, Geno came in and really sparked us, you know, in his attempts, and we can do everything that we do with Russ with Geno. Geno's magnificent at understanding the system and all of that. You could tell that. And we'll just keep putting it together and see if we can get it right. It'd be great to get Chris back. You know, it's a big factor. I did think Alex played well and did a nice job again and was effective in the game. But I agree that it doesn't feel as – it's not as smooth as we like it to be.
So in what cut he's talking about adjusting to the players you've got in reference to Geno. But the first cut was, hey, we can do everything with Geno we could with Russ. So which is it?
Yeah, well, I think he was optimistic after that game because, look, the way it started out, like, I don't remember the fact that he threw an interception. And we all kind of look at that differently, right? That was a different kind of interception. I mean, that was the kind of like, you know, at the end of the half, you throw a ball up, a prayer, and it gets picked off. His receiver just fell down. And, I mean, I think he was, like, releasing the ball as, you know, and it was such a weird – if you go back and look at that thing closely, the guy turns and runs, the defender, and his knee hits the outside ankle of Tyler Lockett's right foot, I believe. And so that causes his leg to, you know, flip over and trip himself. So, you know, you had that. But what you had before that was the 5-for-5 drive where he went 98 yards and scored a touchdown. So you think, okay, yeah, he can do it. So I think what you have there is you have – optimistic, naive Pete, and then you have realistic Pete. Because, look, that's probably the same thing with pretty much every quarterback other than, you know, you look at, like, we talk about the really good gifted quarterbacks, you know, but, like, even, like, Lamar Jackson, I mean, you would have to kind of adapt to his strengths and, you know, some of the things that he can and can't do. Although I think Lamar Jackson can pretty much do everything. Maybe he's not a good example because he's also, you know, a high completion percentage guy. But I think that, yeah, with Geno, look, let's be real. There's a reason why Geno is a backup. You know, he is a backup quarterback. So, you know, that I think that Pete was just being very optimistic in the beginning. I think it's also a little bit that you do. I mean, I think they probably adjust things for Russ too. You know, what's Russ best at?
Right.
You know, you want to run.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But one's sort of implying we're dialing it back, and I think that's a different cut than one we were listening to this morning, Lefko, that might have been post game last night, where he said he's adjusting to the quarterback. He was a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
Than the one we just played, but you know, so you're dealing with his limitations. I get it. It makes perfect sense. I guess I would expect more of Shane Waldron in that instance to be creative. Not, and that doesn't mean, again, chucking it 80 yards down the field every time. No, that's not what I'm looking for at all. Just, hey, if something's not working, like the run game last night, what kind of how do you get creative with it? Do we do a little swing pass? Do we do a little, you know, little slant, little screen, whatever? Just minimize the potential for damage in terms of an interception. But allow the offense to get moving, develop some sort of rhythm in a passing game that does, even with the elements, is considered a safe, you know, conservative passing game, if you will. You didn't see any of that. It was just, well, let's run them up the middle again, and hopefully they find a hole, you know, 28 times, and I think, what, you have 30-some yards, Alex Collins, at the end of the night? You know, just, and I'm not blaming him. You know, you came into that game knowing the Saints are a really, really good run defense. That's kind of what you expected to see. I expected them going in knowing that themselves to have a plan B. All right, we're still going to go out there and make them prove it. But if they do, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
There didn't seem to be that.
Well, and I thought, you know, like we talked about maybe the little checkdowns and maybe the little, like, some of
the tight ends.
How about exactly what the Saints did with Alvin Kamara?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, you stopped him on the ground? Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that I would say that's a fair criticism. totally. And especially, you know, adjustment during the game. And, you know, a lot of times you go back and look and, you know, maybe that's something that you figure out for later on another time. But, yeah, I mean, that's what the Saints did. That's the adjustment that they made. So I think it's just figuring out, you know, I didn't know that Geno couldn't throw on the run before this year.
Right.
I mean, you know, we just haven't seen him. We don't really know. And so you see, you know, you get a bigger sample size and you see, okay, these are the things that, but I think, you know, I don't think Pete was being flowery. Yeah, that happens every day at 3:50. You know what that means? It's time to go to break.
I guess that's what it means.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I mean, I don't think Pete was being overly flowery and positive and all that stuff. I think he was just, you know, like, hey, so far as we know right now, it looks like Geno can pretty much handle everything. Well, 3 games later, that's no knock on Geno, really. I mean, every player's that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for, like I said, the top 5 guys. You know, Aaron Rodgers, Russ, they can do anything.
Well, and it comes back to the original statement. He's a backup for a reason. There's a reason a team hasn't snatched him up one of these years. He's been available every year. They haven't locked him up to multi-year extensions. He's been available every year, and there's a reason he remains a backup. So there's that. All right, coming up, the professor, John Clayton, will join us. You guys know what to do. If you've got a question for John, text it in right now, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. It's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company, and it's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.